I love this little story. I love this little story about a little girl. She was about 7, and the teacher had set a project, a drawing project, and the 7-year-old girl is basically there, and she's drawing. And the teacher's really fascinated because this girl at the back, she's 7, she's really concentrating on drawing. She's not used to, and normally she doesn't engage with what the teacher has put in front of the class. So the teacher is fascinated to find out what is happening here. And there she is, she's drawing away at the back. And so the teacher kind of goes round and looks and says, "Oh, what are you drawing?" And the little girl says, "I'm drawing God. I'm drawing God." And the teacher's like, "Oh, that's interesting, because no one really knows what God looks like." And the little girl says, "They will in a minute." And I love that. I love, "They will. And wait till they see this. They'll know exactly what God looks like." That's cool. And I love the fact that, like, tonight, you know, we're just kind of saying, do you know what? We've kind of experienced God, and we'd love to give you a little glimpse of what he looks like and what God's actually done for us. And, you know, when I come in June, I'm excited about coming because I'm really urging you that you will get your neighbors, your friends, your family. Just get everybody along. Tell them, did it at the Edinburgh Festival. It's funny. You'll enjoy it. It's comedy. It's not a sermon with nice little funny bits. It is a comedy show with bits of God in there. So, you know, people will enjoy it. They'll have fun. So please make sure. It would be amazing if we could ram the place out. Wouldn't that be brilliant? And it would be fantastic. So really excited about that. So my kids, I don't know if you've got guys in your life like this, but my kids are always showing me YouTube clips, yeah? "Dad, you've got... Dad, come and have a look at this, yeah?" And some of the things that they show you scar you for the rest of your life. Do you know what I mean? My son says, "Dad, come and have a look at this. There's a man being mauled by a bull, yeah?" And I know I should have turned away and said, "No, son, we don't believe in that." But I was over there watching it, and it was phenomenal, yeah? And if you forget everything about God, remember this. Watch the YouTube clip, "Man, Bull." It's amazing, yeah? It's phenomenal. So the thing is, they're always showing me, and my daughter showed me this thing, and I was like, "Oh," and some of you, as soon as I begin to talk about it, some of you are going to be like, "Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Others are going to be going, what is YouTube? And so the thing is, so it's like this. It's a story of Tara the cat. So what it is, it's a little clip, and basically it's a real life thing that happened. This little kid is out playing on his bike, and suddenly one of the neighbor's dogs comes. Has anybody actually seen this clip? Brilliant. Well, you guys need to get out and get a job and live a little, yeah? Just, "Yeah, I've seen all the YouTube clips. Yeah, I've seen them all. Don't do anything else. Just sit during the day watching YouTube." So the thing is, basically, it's amazing. This little kid's out in the sort of yard, and suddenly this dog, and one of the neighbor's dog, comes and attacks the little kid. And it's horrendous. My daughter showed me this. I'm thinking, "Kezia, what have you done? What are you showing me this for? It's horrible." The dog is attacking the little kid. And then suddenly, wow, it's amazing. Their pet, the cat that they love, yeah, suddenly comes from nowhere and attacks the dog, yeah? It's brilliant. The cat attacks the dog because the cat is like, "That is my owner. That is my lovely little lad that looks after me. You are not going to maul him." And the cat attacks the dog. It is brilliant. The dog's like, "Flipping egg. What is going on? That is a cat is attacking me, yeah?" And it's brilliant because the end of the clip is the dog running off and the cat chasing the dog. It is fantastic. You've got to watch it. It will change your life. And it might not change your life, but people writing that down, "It will change my life." And it's like amazing. And it's amazing because we all know that cats don't chase dogs. I love the thought of that cat just going down to the pub, having a few pints of milk, and just there with the other cats, and just saying, "Wow, I've chased a dog today." Whoa! No, I chased a dog, yeah, he messed with my owner, I chased him, yeah. Like, wow, they would be like, whoa, talking cat. So the thing is, I got a better response than I was expecting, to be honest. I'm a bit surprised. But you know, it's this funny thing about, you know, cats don't chase dogs. And I want to talk to you because Jesus came and Jesus talked about this upside down world. Jesus came and he spoke about an upside down world. We begin to get a sniff of this in Matthew chapter 5 because Jesus began to speak about an upside down world, an upside down kingdom. He began to talk about, you know, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. You got to understand, everyone's listening to that thinking, what? Just say that. What? Just say that again. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. They're like thinking, the meek, the humble, the downtrodden. How are they going to be the ones that are going to be ruling the earth? What are you talking about, Jesus? Just like we know that cats don't chase dogs, it's like, wow, suddenly we're talking about that the humble are going to kind of like rule the earth. But Jesus was talking about an upside down kingdom. And there's this little time where Jesus begins to model this upside down kingdom to someone called Peter. And there's these 3 days where Jesus models the upside down kingdom to Peter. We see it, and we can see it in John chapter 13. And we begin to see it there because Jesus, it's an amazing, amazing story of Jesus. There he is, the master. They come in and somebody needs to wash the feet. Everyone's feet are dusty and horrible. And the culture of that time is that the lowest of the low comes in and cleans the feet. And Jesus is the master, he's the boss, and he goes and gets a towel and comes and begins to wash their feet. It's like an upside down world. Cats don't chase dogs. Masters do not wash the feet of the servants. It's like everything has been turned upside down. And you know, if you read it there in John, you'll be able to read that Peter does not handle this well. He does not handle it well. He's like, no, his brain cannot take it because he cannot understand Jesus, the master, the boss, the top guy, is getting down and starting to clean their feet. And you know, some of the disciples are like, whoa, this is quite cool. You know, Jesus, the boss guy, is washing my feet. This is pretty cool. But Peter is like, mind is completely screwed. He's like, what is going on? The top guy is cleaning my feet. I can't, no, you cannot do this. You cannot do it. And you know, if you get a chance to read this when you get home, you'll read the story of how Peter's like, no, you cannot wash my feet. This does not make sense. And Jesus is like, no, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, learn to be a servant of all. If you want to be great in God's kingdom, you need to be a servant of all. It's an upside down world. It's an upside down world. It's if you want to be great, then you've got to become the lowest of the low. You've got to serve. It's like, what is going on? We know that like in the corporate business world, the businessman with his own office in the special car park space, he's the top guy. He's not the guy that goes and washes the dishes in the staff canteen. He's not the guy that like, he's the top guy. He's got the office at the top block. And yet Jesus is modeling something totally different and saying, in God's kingdom, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, then you've got to serve. Wow. Can I honor the people that serve in this church. I want to say, as a visitor, I was totally impressed by the team yesterday that were like serving. I loved the fact that they were just there making it all work, doing everything, kind of like in the car park. They got it all going on. They were like making it all work. And I thought, wow, these are truly great in God's kingdom. Truly great. I understand where the preacher guy, the man here that comes in, you know, Mark Ritchie, the great preacher, I know exactly where he lies in the order in God's kingdom. People would say, wow, you know, make sure the preacher has got everything. He's the guy. And I'm looking and thinking, no, in God's kingdom, I'm kind of pretty low down there. And, you know, the person that's serving the Krispy Kremes, yeah, just making everybody totally fat. They're the people that are really great in God's kingdom. And it's like this unbelievable upside down world. I remember as a young lad, we were in a youth group. There was about 15 of us. My son's in a youth group of 300 young people. And he came home, and there's like 300 young people. They've got all the lights. They've got absolutely everything going on. They overtook one of the nightclubs in Nottingham. They've got this incredible band. He came home, and I said to him, how was it tonight? And he's like, oh, it was all right. I goes, I went to a youth group with 12 young people and a table tennis table. Do you know what I'm saying? That was like our youth group. And we had this youth group, and basically a speaker came, and there was only about 15 of us there that night. And this speaker came, and he preached, and he suddenly stopped, right? Which is quite difficult to say. He suddenly stopped, yeah? And basically he stopped. And he said, somebody in this room is going to preach in stadiums and see thousands become Christians. And I was kind of sitting near the back, and my heart began to beat fast. And I was kind of, I think that's me. I think that might be me. I think that is me. And so at the end, I went forward and spoke to the guy. And I says, when you said that, I felt like that was me. And he prayed over me, and I sensed it, that God was going to use me powerfully. And then I told my mates, and my mates were like, what are you chatting about? You're not a man of God. You're a muppet of God. And then it's like, I went and saw my dad, my pastor, and I went and made an official appointment to see him. And I went in and I says, Dad, I had this moment at youth on Friday, and I feel God's called me to preach in stadiums. And this man, when he prayed for me, he said he felt it. And my dad was, that's brilliant. I says, so Dad, you know, because I was 16 at the time, I says, Dad, I really feel like I need to start serving in church. I want to come to church and start doing stuff. I don't just want to come along to the services. I want to start doing stuff. And my dad was like, amazing, amazing. We're going to start you off by, we want you to clean the toilets. And I was like looking at my dad, no, you've misunderstood. Let me start again, Dad, yeah? He's like, I think I'm going to be preaching in stadiums, yeah? Stadiums, that's got nothing to do with cleaning toilets. Stadiums, yeah? So maybe, maybe I can get a slot on a Sunday morning, maybe preaching a bit and stuff like that. And my dad went, well, okay, we'll do the toilet thing, but we'll also do, why don't you do the overhead projector? Does anybody even remember what an overhead projector is? People, for those of you that are sitting here now going, I don't understand, I've never heard of an overhead projector, yeah? There used to be this thing, churches had them, where it was like this kind of animal. It had a bit of a neck, it had a head. Can anybody remember these horrendous things? And you had these acetates, and you had to kind of change the acetates as the songs were going on. And if you were on the overhead, you were like a mile away from every other human being, because do you remember this? The overhead projectors were put in places where nobody else could be near. And you would be there on your own. And there was a guy who led worship at that time who wrote songs called Graham Flippin' Kendrick. And Graham Flippin' Kendrick, every song he wrote had 27 verses to it, yeah? He did not like one little small kind of verse. So you were on the acetate. You were like, oh, shine, Jesus, shine. And you were like, oh, we're back round there again. And, oh. It was a horrendous job. I'm basically, this was a job that my dad gave me. I would serve and kind of do the overhead projector. And I remember like being there doing it. One little thing though, if you ever see an overhead projector, if you kind of start messing with that thing, it starts to shake the thing and it makes old ladies sick. So the thing is, I had to find a way of being creative in some way, and that was my way. So the thing is, some of you are going to like try that. You're going to find an overhead projector and just like have a little play with it. It's very cool. But the thing is, I did the overhead projector. I started to clean the toilets. I started to do the chairs in church. And the reason why that is because if you want to be great in God's kingdom, you've got to learn to be a servant of all. It's like an upside down world. It's like, no, you don't start like in this kind of exalted position, but it's a sense in which we come and we serve. And as we serve, God begins to open doors for us, and it's incredible. I get the chance to speak in stadiums, and one time I preached at the NEC, and 1,300 young people became Christian in that one event. And you know, I have young guys come up to me now, 15 years old, 16 years old, and they look at me and they say this to me. They say, "I want to do what you do. I like that." And I say, "Well, if you want to do that, you go and see your youth pastor and say, what can I do to serve your vision? What can I do?" And when they say, "Hey, listen, would you help clean stuff up? Would you help tidy up at the end? Don't like look down your nose." And these 15-year-old guys look at me and they're like, no, you misunderstand. I want to do that thing that you do. Yeah, up on the stage making people laugh. And I say, "Yeah, but if you want to be great in God's kingdom, you got to learn to be a servant of all." It's an upside down world. And Peter was suddenly looking and suddenly realizing that Jesus was kind of, he was communicating something. He was like saying, "This is not like the way that the world normally works. You know, cats don't chase dogs. And, you know, masters do not serve the servants." But in the kingdom of God, it's an upside down world. And I get upset and get nervous when I hear about people wanting to kind of get on the platform. I don't know, this probably never happens in this church, but in some churches, everybody wants to get on the platform. I want to get a chance to preach, and you know, I don't want to do that other stuff. I don't feel I've got the gift of car parking. I feel like I've got the, do you know what I'm saying? I don't feel like I've got the gift of telling other people what to do. Do you know what I mean? That's my gift. And you look at them and you think, "Oh, that's very good. That's very good." No, that's not how it works in the kingdom. The kingdom of God works there. We've got to serve, haven't we? And I love the fact that you've got so many people with such great attitudes serving in this church. And I want to encourage you and want to say that, you know, God looks on that. And in the economy of God, what you are doing is phenomenal. What you are doing is fantastic. Wow, in this upside down world. But then we have this incredible thing where Peter washes their feet, and so Jesus washes Peter's feet, and then we have this incredible thing where suddenly Peter is watching a second thing. And what happens in this kind of second moment is that, you know, Judas comes and kisses Jesus, and Jesus is taken away, and Jesus is then pinned on the cross. And what's happening in that moment of the cross is a phenomenal thing. Again, it's an upside down world kicking in. It's this incredible sense in which, you know, the world is turned upside down. It's Jesus did something on the cross that turns everything upside down. You see, Jesus' kingdom works inside out. You know, if you go to Waterstones, you go to W.H. Smith's, and you get yourself to the self-help section, you will see stuff like this. They will say things to you like, "If you want to be successful, buy a great suit and get yourself a nice car and look amazing on the outside. And when you look amazing on the outside, you'll begin to feel amazing on the inside." That's conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom says, you know, if you want to be confident, look confident. If you look confident, then actually you'll become confident. That's conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom would begin to tell us that, you know, like if you want to feel optimistic, then just act optimistic, and eventually you will begin to be optimistic. That's conventional wisdom. But Jesus' kingdom is upside down, and he works from the inside out. Jesus does not come along and want to sort you from the outside first, and then hopefully you'll get sorted inside. Jesus comes and deals with you on the inside. He comes and he sorts you on the inside. His wonderful death shows us that his kingdom is inside out. Jesus comes and changes us on the inside. He died on the cross that you will be changed on the inside. That's why I don't get too concerned about some of the stuff on the outside, because, you know, people get like, oh, if you're a Christian, should they have this and should you have that and should you be doing this and should you be doing that? I'm more concerned about Jesus getting you on the inside. Because when Jesus gets you on the inside, everything on the outside will change. But when it's religion, religion deals with you on the outside, and yeah, nothing on the inside changes. Wow. That's why we should never judge people by the cover. We should never judge them by the outside, because really the truth is what is happening on the inside. What did Jesus do on the cross? Jesus did this incredibly powerful thing. I was praying about this cross in 2016, and I was saying, how do we get a picture for that? I saw this incredible image of a castle, and I'm from Edinburgh, so maybe I love castles, but maybe that's why it's kind of in my consciousness. But I saw this image of a castle, and it was this dark, wet, cold, horrible day. And I saw a picture of me, and I'm on the outside of this castle, and I cannot get in. And I can see that the lights are on in the castle, and I can see that in the castle it's warm and lovely, but I'm on the outside. And the other horrendous thing is that there's this moat around the castle. This moat around the castle. And I look and, you know, it's quite interesting that in the old days in castles, they used to throw all the debris, all the guns, all the horrible stuff into the moat. It was this horrendous, gross water that used to go around castles. And I'm looking at this and this vision that God gave me, and I can see that there's no way around. I cannot get in. And I'm like, beginning to understand that God is this castle, this wonderful atmosphere, and I'm thinking, I want to get in there, but I can't get over, I can't get under, I can't get round, I cannot get in. And I remember praying and saying to Jesus, Jesus, what is this picture you've given me? And Jesus says, this is the picture of God, holy God, warm, lovely, beautiful God. And it's like, wow, we cannot get in. But the sin of our lives is like that moat, the garbage, the gunge, the debris of our life. I doubt there's anyone that would put their hand up today and say, I've never done anything wrong. I've got no regrets. We all know that there's stuff in our life that is unsightly, that is rubbish. Let me be honest and be the first to say that my sin is gross and disgusting. I often say it, but if that went up on the screen, some of the things that I think, some of the ways that I act, some of the stuff that I say, I'd be like, it's like, man, it's not cool. It's not cool. It's disgusting. But it's at the end of the story that I'm on the outside of God. But this is the incredible part of the story, is that Jesus came and died on the cross, pinned on the cross, horrendously beaten. Some writers say that his body was so beaten and bust, you couldn't tell whether it was a man or a woman. And his busted, beaten body on that cross, Jesus came and laid down his life. Jesus came and laid down his life. Jesus is the drawbridge. He's the drawbridge that comes down, and he comes down and he makes a way possible. And I see that the castle, there it is. Jesus came down to lay his life down as a bridge so that I could come through the drawbridge into the presence of God. Wow, into the presence of God. That Jesus would come and lay down his life so that a way could be made possible for me to connect with God. Wow. He's dealing with me from the inside out. He's dealing with my gunge, my garbage, my rubbish, my nonsense. Jesus is dealing with it and making a way possible for me to walk into the presence of God. And every single one of us today, that's what we can do. We can confidently, boldly walk into the presence of God because of what has happened at the cross. Amazing. I went to Canada when I was at college, and it was like a really cool trip. And I went there, and basically on the first day, I was working with this church. It was a huge church. They had 3,000 people, and Pastor Barber was the top preach guy. And I went in to see Pastor Barber. I was a young Scottish guy in my early 20s, and he had a cup of tea with me. And Canadians love the Scottish accent. So he was like saying, "Could you say the word tractor for me?" And I would be in his office going, "Tractor." And he was like, "Wow, do you mind seeing that again?" I was like, "This is getting a bit weird now, yeah?" And so, and we had a bit of a laugh, and we had a good time. And then I went and did the whole summer in these youth camps away with all the young people of that church. And then on the last weekend, I was headed back to Edinburgh. I'd got friendly with some of the staff member guys, and they said that they were going to play a game of football. Would I like to come? I was like, "Yeah." So it was a Saturday, the last weekend before I'm flying back to Scotland. I thought it was going to be proper football, like Man United and Liverpool and stuff. But of course, it wasn't that. It was that like American football game where you pick up a ball. Somebody likes that. What is wrong with you? What is actually wrong with you? And it's like, you know, you shout numbers out and everybody just runs and falls over. And then there's a 27-minute break for commercials. So the thing is, it's kind of like we're playing this American football and we're all there and we're getting dirty and it was all cool. And then we go back to one of the guys' houses and they all start having showers and getting into tucks and they've got like their suits on and their white shirts. And I'm going, "Guys, what's happening?" And this is all, and one of the guys from church is getting married, but none of us are invited to the meal, but we're just going to sit at the back, we're going to watch the service, and then we're going to go. I says, "Well, guys, I can't go. Look at me." I was like, dirty t-shirt, my trainers were all ragged, they'd got dirt on my neck. I goes, "Guys, I can't do that." And they were like, "Oh yeah, yeah, we're gonna sit at the back, it's gonna be fine." So cool, we all go, I'm sitting at the back. The bride comes in, it's beautiful, she comes to the front, it's a great service, we're nearly ready to go. And just before the end, Pastor Barber said, "Someone has told me that the Bible College student Mark Ritchie is in the crowd. I'm gonna ask him now to come and pray for the bride and bridegroom." I'm sitting at the back, I've got this horrendous t-shirt on, dirty jeans on, ripped trainers. I'm thinking, "Oh no, I just want to die. I do not want to go to the front." It's like, "Oh no, I want to just run out." And the guys are like, "Go, go, go." And I'm like, going forward, and you can see all these Canadians. "Have you seen him? How dirty he is." And I could hear just one of them turning around. "It's because he's Scottish." And it's like, you know, they're a dirty, dirty people, the Scots. Do you know what I'm saying? I think they eat their own children. And it's like, if you're Scottish, that's just a joke. I'm also Scottish. We don't eat our own children. Yeah, no, we don't. And I'm basically, I'm making my way to the front. And it's like, oh, everyone's looking. And I can see as I'm getting closer, Pastor Barber's like looking. I can tell he's thinking, this is not what I had planned. I did not think he was going to come like this. And as I got close to the bride, I could see the bride through the veil just mouthing these words, "Do not touch me." Yeah, "Do not touch me." Yeah, some guys in the room know what that feels like. Yeah, to have a lady say, "Do not touch me." So the thing is, some guys just gone, yeah, ministry right now. So the thing is, I'm at the front, and I had to kind of do that thing where, like, I'm praying, but I'm kind of not, you know, I'm just kind of hovering. It's like the hover prayer where you're not really actually, you're just like, "Oh, Lord." I was like, "Jesus, now is an amazing time to come back." Yeah. Now, if you're thinking about it, please just come on, because it would help me out. Yeah. And then it was horrendous. And of course, I felt so ashamed. I felt so embarrassed to be there. And, you know, the beautiful bride and her wonderful dress. And you know, I'm going to be honest with you. That's a little bit like, you know, God is holy. He has no sin. God is like beautiful and everything that is good. And you might be brazen about this, but I can't be brazen about it. I know that I've messed up. I know I've done stuff I wish I'd never done. I've got regrets. I've got flaws. I've got insecurities. I've got pride and envy. And I come and I go, how can I touch this holy God? But it's incredible to think that Jesus, as he laid down his life, he made the way possible. That Jesus laid down his life so that our sin is dealt with. I want you to imagine in that story. You see that? I just got a bit excited. I did a little. And it's, I want you to imagine in that story that basically I could turn. I could press pause on the moment. And I could turn to the guy and say, quick, help me. And I was able to take his beautiful suit and his glistening shirt and his wonderful shoes. And he took my rags and I was able to go forward and able to kind of pray for the bride. Imagine if that was possible. And yet that is what happened at the cross. Yeah. Jesus said, listen, give me your rags. Give me your rags. And here is my robe of righteousness. That when we go forward to connect with God, God does not see us in our rubbish. He does not see you in your insecurities, in your jealousy, and in your lust. He sees the righteousness of Christ. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that phenomenal to think when Jesus looks at me, when God looks at me, he sees the righteousness of Christ. When God looks at you, if you choose to make that swap at the cross, he sees the righteousness of Christ. Wow. See, the upside down world, the upside down world is that we change on the inside out. That we begin to change, everything begins to be different on the outside because Christ has changed us on the inside. It's not about putting on a suit and a big Bible on a Sunday and turning up and looking like a Christian, because if you look like one on the outside, but nothing's changed on the inside. But Jesus came and died on the cross that you would be changed on the inside. Wow. And then this bit's going to get a bit personal, and I hope you're okay with that. I hope you don't mind a guy being a bit vulnerable at the front, because I'm going to say a couple of things now. Because here we are in the third point. Peter saw Jesus washing the feet. He saw Jesus on the cross. And then the third lesson in the upside down world happened on the beach. Let me give you like a quick kind of picture of what happened. You can read it in John chapter 21. But basically, what happened is that Peter, he was there when Christ was taken to the cross. And some of you know this story, but Peter was there in the garden when they came for him. And some of you can remember the story that what Peter did is as soon as they came for Jesus, Peter got his sword out. He went to his place of strength. Peter had got his sword and he whipped off the ear of the soldier. Wow. Peter went to his place of strength. And Jesus told Peter to put his sword away and picked up the ear and put the ear back. I love that. I mean, just, you know, hey, yeah, hold on. Just let me get it. Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, wrong way around. Sorry. And just puts it back on. Incredible. Peter went to his place of strength. He was passionate. He was like, come on, we can do this. Peter was a fighter, a warrior. He was strong. He was 100%. Peter would be on the front row jumping up and down at the songs. He would be like, come on, we can do this. We can take this land. He went to his place of strength. And Jesus says, no, Peter, put your sword away. And then Peter denies Jesus three times. He says, I don't know who that guy is. Somebody says, aren't you? Nah. And to prove it, he swears and says, I don't know who he is. And then Jesus rises from the dead. And there's this moment on the beach. Can you imagine being Peter? Peter went to his place of strength. He was strong. He was a passionate one. He was a 100%er. And then he went and let Jesus down big style. And now on the beach, there's Peter, and he doesn't, oh, Jesus, this is horrible. This is awkward. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, I want to build my church on you. I want to build my church on you. And you can imagine Peter being like, not now, Jesus. Not now. I am broken. I'm messed up. I am flawed. Jesus, when we were in the garden, when the soldiers came, and I went to my place of strength, yes, but not now. I'm broken and beaten and bust. And Jesus finally shows Peter that we are in an upside down kingdom, because it's the weak that Jesus can use. It's this incredible thing that God uses the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. That God uses, he chooses the weak to do the things that we would only think could be done by the strong. But he chooses the beaten and the bust and the broken and the smashed. Wow. So here I'm going to be honest with you. Some of you may know this already. A few years ago, God told me to carry a cross over Britain. So I basically was like, yes, let's do it. Now, I thought I was going to be carrying the message of the cross, but God actually wanted me to carry a physical cross. So I had this big aluminium cross, and people put post-it notes. We actually gathered 13,000 post-it notes into the cross. People had written their sins into the cross. It was amazing. We set off at Brighton, and I walked up to Edinburgh, and then I was transported round to Wrexham in Wales, and I walked across to Hull. So I walked in the shape of a cross. I walked for 70 days, and it was 700 miles. It was an amazing thing. I went to my place of strength. I was like, Jesus, come on, we can do this. I'm up for this. And we saw amazing things happen. We saw miracles and healings on the street. We saw lots and lots of people become Christians. It was amazing. But here's the deal, guys. When we finished, my wife came to pick me up, and I remember like I was driving home, and she suddenly saw that I was broken. I was beaten. We had a meal a couple of weeks after in this little favorite Thai restaurant, and our little favorite Thai restaurant on a Friday night, and was sitting there, and the two of us were eating, and we both just had these tears start to come down our cheeks, and we weren't even speaking, we were just crying. I think my favorite moment was the couple next to us just quietly moving their table away from us, yeah? Just gradually getting away from the quiet crying people, yeah? They're not arguing, they're not shouting, they're just quietly crying into their noodles, yeah? I then started to go back and started to try and work again and preach again, and I was turning up at events, and I remember one in London where I went into Starbucks. I was there 45 minutes early. I was like going to do this comedy show, and I remember just being in Starbucks and just started sobbing at this table on my own, just sitting sobbing. If you forget everything else I've said, remember this. If you feel like a sob coming on, go to Starbucks, because they give you free coffee. It is amazing. Just have another espresso, it'll be fine. And I was just there crying and crying. And I remember thinking, if anybody from the show comes in, you know, I'm going to see the guy, or he's the guy that will make us laugh in a bit. That's him, the one weeping, yeah, at the table. And I was completely broken. I was bust. And I felt ruined. I had thoughts that I'd never thought I would think. I had this dark, dark season where I was absolutely done. I had nothing. I'd sit at the dinner table and my daughter would like look at me and she says, Dad, it's like you're not there. I had these moments where it was horrendous. It was so tough. But you know, Jesus comes, and Jesus comes and says, Mark, I want to use you in a greater way than you've ever dreamed or imagined. And I'm like, but Jesus, not now. Before Cross Britain, I was there. I went to my place of strength. I could do this. I can do it. I can communicate. I can do it for you, God. But now I feel broken and beaten. I feel like so done. And God was like, and that is exactly the kind of people that I can use. People that are broken, people that are not depending on their own strength anymore, people that are not going to the place of their own strength, but are actually saying, do you know what? I'm a little bit bust. I'm a little bit broken. But in my weakness, you can find strength. In my absolute kind of confidence gone and brokenness, you can actually help me. You see, I thought that I was absolutely and totally a crackpot. I was thinking things I just could not. I was like, kept saying these words, I think I'm a crackpot. And I met this man of God who put his hands on my hands and says, you're not a crackpot, you're a cracked pot. And as a cracked pot, you can allow the presence of God to come out of the cracks and can touch people and impact people in a way that you never could before. A few weeks ago, I was doing my Edinburgh show that I'm going to do here. And in the middle of all this comedy, there's this young 17-year-old girl who's got all the marks on her arms because she's self-harming. And I'd watched her laughing at all the jokes. And as we start to talk about the presence of God, and as God begins just to ooze out of my cracks, you know what? This young girl, she starts to cry in the middle of a comedy show, and she connects with God in a way that is so incredible and unbelievable. You see, a few years ago, that could never have happened because I would have been in my place of strength. I would have felt like I can do it. I would have felt like I'm the man. But we live in an upside down world that God takes the broken. He takes the weak. He takes those who say, I feel inadequate. I don't feel like I can do it. God, I don't feel like I can do this. That's exactly the people that God can use because he's like, it's an upside down world. So you're sitting here today and you're thinking, I don't know if God can use me in my office to win my friends for God. I'm not an American evangelist. That's amazing, because an American evangelist would not work in your office, yeah? It's like you have been called to be there, and in your kind of offering before God, you are going to see people touched and changed by God. Isn't it amazing to be part of this upside down kingdom where, you know, we started by saying cats do not chase dogs, but I want to say is that in the kingdom of God, it's the weak that God chooses to profound the strong. It is incredible that God takes the foolish things. Read it again. In 1 Corinthians 1 verse 29, read it again, that God chooses the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. It's an upside down world. I love that we're part of the kingdom of God, where things, because here it is, and I felt it this afternoon when I was praying. You know, like if you talk to politicians, they'd say that a group of people gathered together in a room like this, what difference can they really make in this neighborhood? What real difference can they really make? But in the economy of God, wow, God can take a group of people like this, can change housing estates, can change offices, can change places, can change schools, can incredible impact. We're there as a little group of us at Lancaster last night. What can a little group, politicians could come in and say, what is this tiny little group really going to be able to do for Lancaster? But we live in an upside down kingdom, and that little group of people can change Lancaster in a wonderful and powerful way. Wow.